The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back. Wednesday, October 9th, 2019. The great novelist Flannery O'Connor once put it this way: there's many a bestseller that could have been prevented by a good teacher. There's a lot of ways to think about that. You think about the dreck that gets rewarded in our culture, the tedium that becomes famous, the uneducated that are led to the banal. Many of us think back on our great teachers and think about how blessed we were to have them, to know them. And we may think, if we're fortunate, about one great thing they taught us. Now think about how much more fortunate we are and have been when they taught us more than one great thing. Well, the world lost a great teacher yesterday. He may not be famous in all the right and elite circles, but in a good number of precincts that took and takes the founding and Constitution seriously, he was plenty famous. If only he were more famous and more well-read in the popular culture. But rare is the academic who can break through there. The world lost Michael Yeoman yesterday. He was a professor at the Claremont Graduate School, a good friend of mine, and he, with Hadley Arkus and myself and Ryan Williams, created the John Marshall Fellowship at the Claremont Institute, designed, and successfully so, if I may say, to educate promising newly credentialed attorneys to understand the natural law roots of our founding and Constitution. Michael Yeoman was probably single-handedly responsible for saving the Electoral College in the 1970s when it was up on the chopping block once before, and actually perhaps in a more serious way than it has been for the past 2 years. He was a dedicated writer for magazines like Crisis and First Things and, of course, the Claremont Review of Books. Indeed, we had him on the show here this past March, talking about one of his areas of expertise, as mentioned above, the important reasons for the Electoral College. Maybe we'll play it again later today. He was a Yale-educated, University of Chicago-educated student of Harry V. Jaffa's, as I was fortunate to be, and a friend as much as a teacher, but not just to me, to the more important cause of America. Herewith, some words of his about greatness and great teachers and causes upon his being awarded the Henry Salvatore Prize by the Claremont Institute just a year ago. He said, "I first met Henry Salvatore," the name after who the prize was given to him was given. "I first met Henry almost 50 years ago. I've reached the age when almost everything important in my life seems to have happened 50 years ago. Indeed, the wheel has come full circle. I was selected as the first Henry Salvatore Research Fellow while attending the Claremont Graduate School. That brought me into frequent contact with this generous man. To know Henry was to know a man whose courage and keen intellect and fondness for spirited argument sustained his devotion to our nation's founding. Fortunately, for many American institutions, not least the Claremont Institute, Henry put his money where his principles were. He also dedicated a good deal of his time to practical politics, an endeavor that, with one notable exception, he performed exceedingly well. The exception was that at one point he had the delusional idea that it might be a good idea if I ran for Congress, but I'll save that story for another time," Michael said. He went on. "Among other things, Henry was a significant donor to the National Republican Party as well as to his state party back in the days when there really was a Republican Party in California. He was Barry Goldwater's finance chairman in 1964, as well as the premier and wisest member of Ronald Reagan's kitchen cabinet long before Reagan achieved political fame. Among other things, it was Henry who convinced Goldwater that Reagan should deliver a televised speech in his behalf during the 1964 campaign. Entitled The Time for Choosing, it became an instant classic and catapulted the former actor onto the national stage. From that moment on, every sentient being knew what Henry had intuited many years before, that Ronald Reagan would soon become a force to be reckoned with. The rest, as they say, is history. Back in 1967, when Henry and I first met and talked, the country was in the throes of heated, not to say raucous, domestic turmoil. not unlike today. In those days, most of the sound and fury was occasioned by the war in Vietnam. Other forces were at work, to be sure, but their effects were for the time being quarantined. Although the sexual revolution had been launched, for example, it had not been fully eroticized into the culture. The sybaritic eruptions of Woodstock were yet a few years away. The same held true for the ideas of thinkers like Herbert Marcuse and Antonio Gramsci and Saul Alinsky, whose radical ruminations were for the most part celebrated only in obscure journals. And while college students, as many adults said at the time, were certainly revolting, their passionate enthusiasms had only partly infected the larger body politic. All that and more would descend upon the nation in short order. But in 1967, a rational observer could still believe that American institutions were basically sound and that electoral politics would return to normal once the adults returned from vacation. 1968 saw the election of Richard Nixon, who would be reelected 4 years later by one of the largest landslides in American history. His successor, the former nuclear submarine commander, Jimmy Carter, hardly personified the spirit of Woodstock, and after he left the scene, his successor declared the great applause that it was morning in America again. For a while, it was. But following the demise of the Soviet Union, we turned our gaze inward. There we discovered, as Hamlet's mother said, dark and grained spots that would not leave their taint. While America busied itself in the noble work of taming the Soviet bear, cultural decay had gnawed at the vitals of the civilization that men like Ronald Reagan celebrated and defended so often and so well. The so-called holiday from history that began in 1989 with the fall of the Berlin Wall and ended on 9/11 with the fall of the Twin Towers was not only a wake-up call to redefine American foreign policy, it had also laid bare the relativism, now bordering on nihilism, that had infected American political culture, indeed the culture of the entire Western world. We can see much more clearly now the decadent path on which Western culture had been descending for the better part of the 20th century. To one who reached his maturity in the 50s when God was in his heaven and all seemed right with the world, perhaps the most surprising fact is the speed with which cultural decay has undermined seemingly solid institutions. Here is one measure. In the 60s and 70s, the chant of, hey, hey, ho, ho, Western civilization's got to go, was the more or less exclusive mantra of coddled college students with too much time on their hands and too little in their heads. That same slogan today has infected the bloodstream of the entire Democratic Party and appears to be the very raison d'etre of its dominant wing. Similar sentiments, mutatis mutandis, are echoed by many liberal interest groups, the professoriate, and the news media. The barbarians, in a word, are not only inside the gates, they are far more numerous, dispersed, and powerful than once they were. How best to counter this threat is, I believe, the central challenge facing America today. It will be up to you, in your diverse capacities, to devise relevant solutions. Despite occasional bouts of gloom to which men of my age are prone, I am confident that the collective intellectual energy and moral courage of men and women will rise to the occasion. I'll have a few suggestions to make along these lines momentarily, but before doing so, allow me to dilate just a bit on the constitutional aspects of the crisis now confronting our nation. First, I think it beyond argument that we do face a genuine crisis. That is, it is very deep, and that it is essentially moral and intellectual rather than merely political in the narrow sense of that term. I also think that conditions are likely to get worse before we see improvement. But when and if the denouement arrives, I believe the resolution will strain our constitutional order as nothing before. I say this because a significant percentage of the population seems to have lost faith in the foundations of American constitutional order. That should not be altogether surprising. Should not be altogether surprising because, inasmuch as they have been badly tutored, they are poorly teaching. The loudest and most influential amongst their instructors have argued for two generations or more that the Founders' Constitution is not merely mistaken in this or that feature, but that it is fundamentally flawed and even illegitimate. for many, if not most, left-wing intellectuals. It is seen as an anti-democratic plot foisted upon naive citizens by corrupt white males. This disposition, once the more or less exclusive property of hot-headed pamphleteers, agitators, and the professoriate, has surfaced increasingly in the rhetoric of prominent public officials who disparage the Constitution they have taken a solemn oath to protect and defend. Quite right, Michael. Quite right. Rest in peace, Michael Yeoman. And all praise to great teachers. I'm Seth Leibson. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960. A lot of political news here. Joe Biden, it is being headlined, made his first today in his out-and-out call for Donald Trump to be impeached. I kind of thought he had done that last week in that presser he did outside of the SEIU conference in Los Angeles, audio of which we played. We may go back to some of that audio again. But in any event, he doubled down today. They'll call it a first, I suppose, calling for Donald Trump's impeachment. He said to preserve our Constitution, our democracy, our basic integrity, he should be impeached. He's shooting holes in the Constitution. We cannot let him get away with it. Trump will do anything to get reelected, including violating the most basic forms of democracy. It's stunning and it's dangerous. No president in history has dared to engage in such unimaginable behavior. Now, again, let me repeat, this was at a political speech Joe Biden gave. He did not subject himself or open himself up to or for questions from the media. And I think that's the tell here. I think it's frankly quite easy at this point for Democrats to give these platitudes about shooting holes in the Constitution or saying the president or no president in history has dared to engage in such unimaginable behavior for violating what the most basic forms of democracy. These I say are platitudes because I've never heard the specific. What is it? Now, Hillary will be a little more specific. She'll say the president is using foreign interference to alter an election. I suppose that's at least a specific charge. But what's the specific evidence? What is the specific evidence of this? This we never hear. This we never get. And I'll say one other thing that gives me a little bit of comfort. Perhaps it's cold comfort, but it's comfort nonetheless that I'll take. See if you're with me on this. Aren't you glad to at least hear the Democrats supporting the Constitution? Aren't you kind of glad to hear that this is something you shouldn't shoot holes in? Aren't you kind of glad that Democrats all of a sudden have found out that the Constitution is worth something more than just being denounced as the brainchild of white supremacists? I'm kind of glad they refound their Constitution. I do, however, note that they can't tell me what provision of it he is shooting holes in or shredding. I'm waiting for that. Now, of course, Hillary, on a book tour with her daughter, you kind of got to feel a little sorry for Chelsea. Have you seen these interviews? They run about 20 minutes long. Who was the big one we had her on last week with? Who was she? Was it the Today Show or maybe it was ABC, whichever it was, one of the big morning shows. And it might have been Stephanopoulos. Whatever it was, Chelsea just kind of sits there like a potted plant. No one really wants to hear from Chelsea. It's kind of interesting. She's kind of dragging Chelsea along there. But I'll say this for Hillary. At least she's making her child available, unlike Joe Biden, who's really got a child who is in the news, who he is not making available. So I'll give Hillary credit for that, I suppose, just that no one has anything interesting to ask Chelsea because she herself has never really said anything interesting. They are on a book tour because they wrote a book about heroic women. And, of course, who better than Hillary Clinton to write a book about heroic women, she being such a hero to the feminist movement herself and to feminism, I suppose, by some kind of corrupt definition. She said last week the most, what was it, brave thing she ever did was decide to stay married to her husband. Is that something feminists want to hear? Is that a badge of first, second, or third or whatever wave of feminism we're in? Perhaps I can be educated on this. Perhaps I'm just uneducated, or I haven't had my consciousness sufficiently lifted to understand what she means by that or why that makes her qualified to write books on women. But, you know, anyone can write a book on anything, I suppose. And she has written this book, which is perfectly timed landing to give any number of opportunities for the press to interview her on the goings-on of the day, which involve, of course, President Trump and impeachment. So yesterday she sat down for about 20 minutes with Judy Woodruff of PBS, and I see how she gets away with it, and I see how the press lets her. She rattles off lies. She rattles off lies. Indeed, at one point you'll hear it. I just want to lay it down as a predicate before you hear it, perhaps as an inoculation. At one point, Judy Woodruff says, well, do you understand the argument that the House should have a full vote for an impeachment inquiry before we proceed, the nation proceeds, or the House proceeds with impeachment? And Hillary says something very much like, we'll play the direct thing in a moment, says something very much like, I understand the argument, I don't buy it, because back when I was on the Senate staff during Watergate, we never had a full House vote. And I thought, that's not my memory, and I'm a lot younger than she was. I was only 6 years old at the time, I think. And so I did go back and look it up. And of course, it's a lie. Indeed, there was something called HRES, House Resolution 803. In fact, it's titled Resolution Providing Appropriate Power to the Committee on the Judiciary to Conduct an Investigation of Whether Sufficient Grounds Exist to Impeach Richard M. Nixon, President of the United States. It was introduced on February 4th, 1974, by Peter Rodino, Democrat of New Jersey. And how do you know it had a full House vote? Because it was voted 410-4. So Hillary just lies. Did she not know that history? If she didn't know it, she's unqualified to talk about it because she was on the Senate staff there at the time. If she's lying, she's unqualified to listen to. Before we do that, you know, let's end on an uplifting note of audio with Hillary and Donald Trump. You know what I want here? I want the anniversary quote from the debate that took place this time in 2016 that Donald Trump put out today. Go ahead and play that.
Checking, because, you know, it is, it's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Because you'd be in jail.
Yes.
Secretary Clinton.
Yes. 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 That's right. That's right. When we play Hillary Clinton's interview with Judy Woodruff, this, is, of course, is where she is bragging that if Donald Trump wants a rematch, she'll beat him again. News to Hillary, I think she would lose worse, and she didn't beat him the first time. Okay? If we have to review the whole point of the popular vote, I'm happy to do it. And it's not simply because that's not how we elect presidents here. It's because Donald Trump did not campaign for the popular vote. If he did, I bet you he could have beaten her there too. All right, I'm Seth Leibson, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Leaving someplace to go, baby. A little culture and economy update from John Dombrowski. On that very unexpected ad-libbed lyric from Frank Sinatra, John, you spotted another interesting survey that came out today.
Yes.
On a substantial number of seniors now continuing to work, saying they can't afford to retire,
yeah.
And two-thirds of those still working do cite finances as the primary reason why they do continue to work. I guess average retirement age, it's gone up a little bit over the years here. It's roughly in America, but somewhere between 65 and 67.
Mm-hmm.
But more and more people are working beyond that because they only have somewhere on average of about $133,000 saved, it looks
like. Yeah, not very good. So this was It's a poll by Provision Living. Mm-hmm. And this says 6 out of 10 people polled say that they're working into retirement purely for financial reasons. And the company talks a little bit about they've surveyed a little over 1,000 people. And that was just in this and just in August here between the ages of 65 and 85. Still working, as you said. Now, what's interesting, Seth, is that the main reason, of course, is because they feel they can't retire. They don't have enough money right. to support, you know, their family and what it's costing in their retirement or prior to retirement even. But what I'm seeing here is that if you think about this, they're also stating you should have about 8 times your starting salary.
Right. I was going to ask you what that meant. Yeah, I'm with you on that.
That's kind of interesting, yeah. I thought. So, okay, if I started at $30,000 a year, mm-hmm. then I should have $240,000 saved for retirement.
Okay.
Still don't know if that would be enough. Right, because it's really going to be depending on what your Social Security benefit is. Most likely, you're not going to have a pension. And is this all retirement money, money that you're going to have to pay taxes on as you're pulling out? I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into this. And we all live at different standards of living. So it's really going to depend what's your standard of living.
Now that's a great point, John. We're, of course, talking with John Dombrowski from Grand Canyon Planning. I looked up another website on this. See if you like this a little better. This sound, I think you will, but you tell me.
All right.
And it's from Fidelity. Fidelity yep. has a rule of thumb. Which is this: aim to save at least 1 time your salary by 30, 3 times your salary by 40, 6 times by 50, 8 by 60, and 10 by 67.
Right, right. That's the Fidelity one, right?
Right.
That's true. And remember this too. And I agree with that. But let's think of this also. When are you going to retire? Because people that I meet with, a lot of them come to me, they're in their late 50s, and they're just basically saying, I need to retire. I want to retire. Okay.
Yeah, I know people in their early 50s saying that.
Very true. But so the thought is that, okay, now if you did retire at age of 60 or 61 or 62, we think that we're just going to go collect Social Security and be on our way.
Right.
Yes, you can collect Social Security at the age of 62. That's the earliest you can do that. Of course, your benefit is going to be wildly decreased from retiring at your full retirement age. And most likely, Seth, those born like in the late 50s, your full retirement age is probably about 66 and 8 months.
Okay.
Not 62 okay. and not 65.
Mm-hmm.
65 is an important age mm-hmm. because that's the age that we can now go on Medicare.
Right.
So for insurance purposes, that's good. But if you're going to retire early, you're going to have to supply your own insurance, which is going to be expensive. And also, if you're going to collect Social Security at the age of 62, it's going to be substantially decreased. So remember, 65 is an important age, but 67 is most likely that full retirement age for that Social Security benefit.
And that is interesting as an age because, you know, once you're in, you have said on this show before, you can help people at almost any stage of their life. Of mm-hmm. course, the help becomes marginally, you know, harder to right. do as long right. as they're as long as they're still at work. But if they're seeing you in their 60s and just starting to think about it, that's a heavy, heavy, heavy lift.
Yeah, but I would say this to most people out there listening. Come see me no matter whatever
right.
the age is.
Right.
Because as you just said, we can help folks, you know, focus on what needs to be,
right.
You know, massaged or tweaked in order to help you get to where you need to
that's
be.
That's the point. There's always an angle to
There's
help.
There's always, yeah. always a way for right. us to work
right.
through things.
Right.
Now, that may be a little bit of work on your own as well. May have to cut some of your expenses or change some of your spending habits. But we could certainly look at all of that and we can really get it right down to a fine-tuned point that this is what you need to do in order to get where you need to be.
Because you don't want to be where this poll is. You don't want to be at really the average retirement age, 67, 70, really wanting to retire and not able to.
I want folks to, if they want to work, that's great.
You
that's
bet.
What I'd like.
Right.
Because you still want to work and you enjoy
bet.
It.
You bet. You bet. You bet. And right, a lot of people do
yes.
do excellent work.
They
in
do.
I'm thinking of musicians. I'm thinking of writers.
Yeah,
I'm
oh my
thinking
gosh.
Of think tank types.
And also, if you wanted to work, maybe your company will allow you to work a few less hours.
Bingo.
Securities and Advisory Services offered to Client One Securities LLC, a member of FINRA and SIPC, and an investment advisor, Grand Canyon Planning Associates LLC, and Client One Securities LLC are not affiliated.
You made it.
I did it.
Thank you, John. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. If you're feeling run down and don't have the energy that you used to, it's probably because you're not eating enough fruits and vegetables. I've started my commitment to balance of nature, and I am following the footsteps of my friend and radio colleague, Sebastian Gorka, who's been with Balance of Nature for months now. And Seb can tell us, all of us, just a little bit about his experience.
Seth, one of the best things about Balance of Nature is you get a personal health coach. Now, this applies very much to me because I like stuff for free. And this is free for all Balance of Nature customers. And if you're like me and need to be told what to do, your personal health coach is going to guide you through every step of your personal wellness journey.
Thank you, Seb. Experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself. Call or go online now and become a preferred customer, which gets you their best pricing and free shipping, and they'll take off an additional $25 from your first order. This will be a limited-time offer, so don't wait. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code BALANCE. I was talking a little bit earlier about the interview Hillary Clinton did with Judy Woodruff. And it's just really fraught with and full of lies that are quite amazing to me. It's not amazing, I suppose, that someone like Judy Woodruff didn't call her out on him. But do understand how this stuff does work. Hillary lies over and above what the press understands. And it's out there. It just resonates. And we'll go through them. Play me cut one.
And there were a number of people on the call. Part of the telling evidence in this case is that immediately after the call, the people who were either listening in or listening to Trump's end of the call knew that they had problems, which
Stop.
Is why they...
Not true. Immediately after the call, it's not true. It's not true. We only learned about this controversy, what, almost not quite 3 weeks ago. Go on.
Knew that they had problems, which is why they tried to basically conceal the call within a highly classified system.
Stop. So, classified system that the Obama administration used when she was Secretary of State. And I don't understand the argument. I still don't understand the argument that the Trump administration was trying to conceal it when they fully released it. Go on.
So Pompeo was in on it. He knew from the beginning that this was a problem. It's really a shame that he has substituted the defense of Trump for the defense of diplomacy, the defense of our country, literally doing the job that a Secretary of State should do.
Stop. Ukraine is an ally. The Ukrainian president has said he felt no pressure, that he didn't feel being pushed at all. What job did Mike Pompeo not do? If keeping an ally happy is the goal, the ally is happy. The ally is so happy that he is willing to cooperate with us on investigations. All of this is just sentences that relate in no way to reality. Now, yeah, you would want a good reporter to stop her on these things, but just understand the rapid-fire Gatling gun the Democrats use to bowl over the media. I think Judy Woodruff is terrible. I'm not in any way defending her. I just think it's important that we point out how many lies get told in each sentence. Go on.
No problem for Joe Biden because his son was in a position to be making a lot of money from a company in that was in a foreign country. You know, Judy, this is the goal of the Trump strategy. It is to raise questions. There is no evidence that either one of them did anything wrong. Could there be a question of judgment about his son? Well, that's fair game.
Stop. But there's no evidence that Donald Trump did anything wrong either. In fact, Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff and the House Democrats are saying they want to have impeachment inquiries to inquire and find out if anything wrong was done. Well, I mean, you can do that about anything, but notice the double standard. Notice the double standard. Without evidence of Trump doing anything wrong, she wants full-blown impeachment inquiries. Without evidence of Joe Biden having done anything wrong, she wants it shut down. And I dare say there's a lot more smoke around the fire of what the Bidens were doing than there is about what Donald Trump was doing. I don't want to be a broken record here, but I think if you actually read the transcript between President Donald Trump and Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of the Ukraine, you would read it to read, isn't this what two allies converse about normally all the time? Isn't this just what you call diplomacy? What harm is being done when the ally doesn't feel pressured and the president of the United States doesn't think anything wrong was done? When the secretary of state doesn't think anything wrong was done? When the only people that think wrong was done are Democrats? Well, I get that. They may not like Donald Trump's foreign policy. It is of the nature of opposition parties to question opposition foreign policy. I get that. We have differences of political opinion. They're not impeachable offenses. They're not impeachable offenses. What is the allegation of wrongdoing, shredding and shooting holes into our Constitution that she is now indicting her successor, Mike Pompeo, for not rising to the occasion of? I will tell you, if I'm Mike Pompeo and I'm the Secretary of State and I see good relations going on between an allied country, I have no reason to blow a whistle. The only people who have problems with this are Democrats. And isn't it interesting, having used the phrase blow a whistle, that the whistleblower is attached to, as according to the Inspector General, one of the rival Democratic campaigns for the presidency against Donald Trump. Now, if the gravamen of the Democrats' complaint here is that Donald Trump is engaging in some kind of election interference or help in winning an election, why is that standard not applied to the whistleblower who is attached to a rival presidential campaign? Why does that not nullify everything he says? Continue on.
There is absolutely no evidence, and there will not be any evidence that Joe Biden did anything wrong. Enough with these wild, unfounded conspiracy theories using the help of foreign governments to interfere in our elections and to undermine people who've been in the public eye for a long time. And I hope that the American public rejects this, as they should.
Right. Again, what's the interference? What is the interference? The interference is to inspect and look into something that took place in 2016. Hillary Clinton, in every speech she has given since 2016, has been about wanting people to look back at interference that took place in 2016. Why couldn't a reporter say, Mrs. Clinton or Madam Secretary, you have written about and you have given speeches about interference and foreign interference in the 2016 election? Does President Trump not have an equal right to look into interference in the 2016 election? I'd like that question asked of her. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Just wanting to finish up this interview with Hillary Clinton that Judy Woodruff did yesterday, because it is so illuminating of how the Democrats get away with what they get away with and how the media just doesn't know what questions to ask her or doesn't want to ask her these questions. Let's take the next clip, Bill.
Back in 74, the full vote never went to the House. The House committee voted to impeach Richard Nixon. And at that point, after the evidence had been presented, after several Republicans...
Full stop. That's just a lie. It's just a lie. As I said in the last segment, House Resolution 803, 1974. The resolution is titled, "The Resolution Providing Appropriate Power to the Committee on the Judiciary to Conduct an Investigation of Whether Sufficient Grounds Exist to Impeach Richard M. Nixon, President of the United States," and it passed 410-4. Yes, indeed, the full House voted. Please, some reporter fact check that. Please, Washington Post, give her four Pinocchios, or five if you have them. It's a lie. And I know it's a lie because she was there. Does she think we don't have access? You know, the funny thing about that clip from the debate we played with her and Donald Trump from the anniversary this time in 2016. She was doing all this talk about, boy, I hope all the fact checkers out there are doing their work because so many lies are being told. That was an encouragement, obviously, to the media to do their fact checking. She was obviously speaking to the media to do their work. But I don't think she understands that we all have access to this stuff. I really don't think she understands that, because there's another big lie she'll tell in a moment, too. Keep going.
And at that point, after the evidence had been presented, after several Republicans on the House Judiciary Committee voted for the articles of impeachment, Republican senators went to Richard Nixon and said, you need to resign.
Oh, that's true, but it was after
the
vote.
So we don't know.
Keep going.
Oh, sitting here today, what the outcome will be. Unfortunately, I don't know that we have Republicans with the same level of patriotism, putting country over party.
Oh, are Democrats now questioning the patriotism of Republicans? I thought this was the big no-no. I thought you were not allowed to question the patriotism of another person because of their party. I just heard Hillary Clinton say, I don't know that the Republicans have the same patriotism. Wow. They just let her get away with this stuff. Brian Kennedy on all things going on in the culture and with China when we come back. And we will be right back.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.